Blog Talk Radio.
To get started, we are. Hey, let's get it to it.
Yeah, buddy, we got coming out of the big text. What's going on, Jamal? What's going on?
What's going on, man? We got a good one today. Got a real good one.
All right, and we got the Midwest Swinger, Chi-Town Mike. What's up, Mike?
What's going on, everybody? Hey, I see y'all calling at a time. That's on me. My ringer was not on, but hey, it's on now. So hey, I was just waiting. I'm getting it cracking. Let's start it for the show.
All right. We got a good show for you guys today. We're going to be talking about a lot. Later on, we're going to have Greg Smith, a sports writer from Black Sports Online, going to be up on here talking with us. We're going to talk with some NCAA. We're going to talk about the NFL. We're going to have a lot go on. Let's get it started off with I want to talk about this Johnny Manziel situation. This book is very current. We just found out that he's going to be suspended a half a game for his NCAA infractions. And there are a lot of people that are up in arms about this, especially with some of the recent suspensions that seemingly for less. You know, you can look at Ohio State. You can look at Dez Bryant's situation. And the Ohio State situation was with us, Terrell Pryor, Devere Posey, and a couple other guys. And, you know, it's just seems like things aren't adding up. And especially, you know, like I said, you really want to go, you look at something like what happened with USC and where the whole program was on sanction. And, you know, and especially with, you know, with what's going on with Miami hanging in the balance, nobody, you know, you still haven't heard about what's going on with them. Seems like they kind of expedited and lessened the punishment on Johnny Manziel. What do you think about that, Jamal?
Well, you know, let's just, you know, call it what it really is. If you're, you know, if you're rich, you know, you're white, come from a family of influence, you know, it kind of, you know, it kind of works in your favor like it has Manziel. Is just, you know, I don't know what to say. I mean, obviously, there's something there. You stand by the kid, but, you know, if you're A&M and you're suspending him for a half, That's it. I mean, guys have gotten suspended for a year for doing less. You know, this is just, you know, this is part of his privilege. That's all it is. It's just part of his privilege.
Well, this is the thing about that. I mean, my understanding is he signed autographs. Do we know, is there evidence that he signed autographs? Because they said that
he signed the autographs for sure. The question is, the question was whether he got paid or not, and they said that there's proof that he got paid, but it's for sure that he did do the autograph session.
Yeah,
and,
but
you know,
what I'm saying
before,
is there
you
evidence?
You don't do those kind of sessions without getting paid.
Right, understood. But, like, in terms of, is there evidence that the NCAA has that he did it? We know he did it. I understand that. We know he did it. But is there evidence that he did it in terms of signing the autographs? And then, obviously, there's probably no evidence that there was a money exchange.
Was there evidence that Dez Bryant did anything? I mean, what kind of evidence you looking at?
Yeah, no.
The thing with Dez Bryant, he lied.
Excuse me?
There's no violation of NCAA rules, though.
There's no evidence that Reggie Bush took money.
There's evidence that Reggie Bush took money. There was evidence. First of all, yes, there was evidence. The guy was on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. He had Reggie Bush's father on tape about taking money.
On tape, on tape taking money?
Yeah, taking money from his sports agency.
He had a videotape of Reggie Bush's father. He had an audio tape. How can you have an audio tape of somebody taking money? That's insanity.
No. Of saying that he's going to take the money or something like that.
Why would anybody? Nah, I don't believe that.
It was on Real Sports Brian Gumbel. I heard the tape. Whatever, man. It was on Real Sports Brian Gumbel.
I'll go look it up. Anyway, Reggie Bush didn't do anything. In this case, this is directed towards Johnny Manziel. And the biggest evidence is if somebody has a football with Johnny Manziel's signature on it. That's evidence. That's real evidence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
First of all, let me say this. I know he did it.
Nobody's not disputing if he did it or not. I'm not justifying this guy or anything like that. What I'm saying is there evidence, like,
think about it. Besides his signature, you can't get any more hardcore evidence than that.
Do they have his signature? That's the point I'm trying to say.
That's what I'm saying. All it would take is for one person to go, okay, here, I got this picture. Johnny signed. I mean, like I said, there's evidence. He was there. These were autograph sessions with thousands of people there. He was there. Like I'm saying, it's whether he got paid or not. And like I say, you don't just sign 1,000 autographs for free. It doesn't benefit anybody. So, I mean, it's not a question of, you know, like I said, it was clear. I mean, to me, it was clear cut. Like I said, the NCAA doesn't release a lot of, they really don't release anything about how they come to these decisions, which is why a lot of people are mad with that. But, you know, like I say, I mean, to me, like I say, it's clear cut. You're not going to get the Dave Chappelle situation with you know, where you got the guy with all of his Social Security card hiding with his grandmother in the background and taking a picture of him. To me, he got a slap on the wrist. I mean, that's ugly. Especially you figure with the NCAA, with all the other trouble they've been in recently, you figure they would at least try to make things fair. But, you know, I guess letting you know that this world ain't fair.
Exactly.
Mike, you have any thoughts about that, Mike?
I mean, it's all Johnny, go Johnny. That's how it's going to be. It's all about Johnny Manziel. And your guy, Jason Whitlock, I was watching PTI today. He was saying, well, hey, he thought the NCAA got it right where it's half the game. You know, it's money. You know, hey, he's right now the biggest star, so. Like we saying things in life, like we said, is about money and politics. And Johnny Manziel is the biggest star, pretty much news, attention, worry all season to now. So, you know, they was going to have to figure something out, have him playing. But It just shows how the system is flawed.
I don't even think, I really don't even think this can be good for Johnny Manziel himself, because this is going to give him a sense of invincibility to where he thinks he can do anything now, you know? I mean, this can't, you know, this can't be good for him as a person. You know, like I say, you already had his parents excusing his drinking because he was stressed out. Now, you know, he's learning, okay, now the NCAA isn't going to do anything to me. I mean, who knows what this guy is going to do next? I mean, just think, this has been one summer of fiasco, 2 months of fiasco after fiasco for Johnny Manziel.
Yep.
It's been nonstop. And all,
well,
it is. None of it's been outside sources. It's all been him.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like Ricky Williams came out and said, he said the Heisman brings a lot of attention to the athlete, of course, but if you knew Manziel's, and this is straight from Ricky Williams, he said if people knew his background, knew about his behavior beforehand, then they wouldn't be surprised by anything that was going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that bothered me too. You know, we talked about that before, how that his arrest and for assault never really came out, you know, in the general public besides Deadspin, like the way the Cam Newton situation did when he was up for the Heisman. You know, that really bothered me. And then I followed up on that other issue I was talking about between him and a coach. Apparently that was just it was over-exaggeration, or at least that's what they're saying, it was over-exaggeration. It wasn't a real confrontation. I posted that information on the CMP Firestorm page. But I don't know what's going on with this kid. It's just, you know, it's just leaving a sour taste in my mouth. You know, some of the things that he's already been able to get away with. And I don't know. I just hope, you know, like I say, it's just, you know, like I say, fiasco after fiasco. It's been, you know, I've never seen one guy do this much in this least amount of time, you know, and he's only in college. It's amazing, and not facing any major suspension. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, he posted today saying, Terrell Pryor, A.J. Green, Dez Bryant should all be heated. Manziel benched for half an NCAA deal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, you look at Dez Bryant, I mean, he lost out on a whole season of college football over a lie. Not that he did anything wrong over a lie. I mean, look at how they're investigating Deion Sanders sign just because he got backstage to a Lil Wayne concert. And you know, and that's like I said, not like his dad isn't Sanders. So I mean, I figured Deion Sanders can do stuff like that for his son, but they're investigating that something to be done about it. You know, so. I don't know. It's just weird, especially like I said, you know, the NCAA, they've been very quiet about this. So it's just a weird way.
Something's just got to change, man, with all of this, man. I mean, they was having to talk about it. They were saying, I was listening, you know, they bring in money. I mean, obviously, if a man, I mean, you know, like I said, with Swap, if a man wants to sign an autograph and get money on it, it's his autograph. I mean, it's his signature, so why he can't, you know, make money on it, you know, it's not the NCAA, it's his money. Let's say Johnny Manziel, they were saying, let's say Johnny Manziel, I'm not wishing this on him or anybody else, but let's just say Johnny Manziel comes in the first play and boom, gets a hit, tears his ACL, and he's done for the rest of the year, and probably, you know, we all know about ACL injuries, and, you know, pretty much that's going to be a whole year and not really be the same player and all that type of stuff. And, let's say, you know, all this other stuff, and then he doesn't, you know, get drafted in the first round or even only get drafted in the NFL. We already know, you know, how many millions he could lose out on that. So, hey, right now it's about making money. I mean, they were saying, hey, because some of these people might not even make it to professional sports. Remember, in football, especially football, it only takes one play.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like I said, quarterback position is a very high-profile, you know, high-profile, high – you know, high demand position. It's, you know, it's, like I said, if you look at all sports, it's probably the pinnacle of the sports is the quarterback. You know, it's the one position, you know, where you know you're going to be at the top. You know, the quarterback, you know, it's the most looked at. That's, you know, who everybody wants to be. He's the hero. He's all, you know, he's either the hero or the GOAT, you know, depending on, you know, no matter what happens. So, you know, it's a very, very important position. Like I said, we're going to be having a guest caller come on very shortly. He's going to actually be speaking with us about quarterbacks with an influence on black quarterbacks in NFL and college. So that's going to be interesting to talk about. With this, you know, like what you said about Rick Williams with the Heisman Trophy, is Heisman, it seemed like it kind of lost its luster. '90s, you know, Geno Toretta through guys up to Eric Crouch. It's kind of getting its influence back. Is the Heisman back to where it used to be? Is this the highest individual award that you can receive again? What do you think, guys?
I think it's a bit of a sham. I mean, it's almost always the best players aren't winning it. It's just, you know, it's kind of it looks like it's a formality now. How many, I have to go look it up, but I mean, what percentage of people that have won the Heisman Trophy have gone on to have great NFL careers? How many people that aren't winning the Heisman, I guess that's unfair because only one person can win it, but yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, you know, just like last year. You had a lot of guys that should have been there at the ceremony, but you're sitting here with three people, one being that overrated linebacker from Notre Dame. it's just more of a formality.
He's looking good, man.
He's
looking good in San Diego, from what I've heard, man.
I've heard that too.
Yeah. Already looking really good too.
He's two downs and he comes off the field. That's not good enough.
All
right. We'll see.
All
right. Yeah, you say that.
Hey, Mike, we ready. We ready, Mike.
Okay, let's continue this after we get our guest on. We have our guest. He's in a holding right now. We have Greg Smith. He's going to come on with us. Greg, you're on with us. CNT first.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
How you doing?
Hey, Mike? How's it going, sir?
All right.
Very well, very well.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about, first thing, there's some things that are going on right now in the NFL that I'm noticing, particularly with the black quarterback, in regards to I feel like he's being attacked through the media in a sense of, like, his backup. Let's say, for example, Josh Freeman in Tampa Bay, where I live, Geno Smith in New York. And Cam Newton in Carolina. So I kind of feel like, you know, or Robert Griffin III, I kind of feel like the media is trying to drum up controversy towards a black quarterback. I mean, the black quarterback could do everything the right way, say all the right things, but I feel like a lot of members of the media are trying to drum up some sort of controversy, try to get them to react. And I'm just noticing that's a pattern, with the exception of Russell Wilson. And even to a small extent with Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco, they're trying to get him to do some controversy, but not as much as particularly with Geno Smith, Josh Freeman, and Robert Griffin III. So I want to know what's your take on the media coverage of the black quarterback in today's era? Do you think it's fair in comparison to other quarterbacks?
No, you know, I think it's always been a little slanted or a little tougher for black quarterbacks. I mean, even if you go back to before this most recent group that you just mentioned, if you go to, you know, Donovan McNabb or Dante Culpepper or Mike Vick in his prime, it always seems like every little thing kind of gets blown up, whether it's McNabb being attacked by reporters or whether it's Culpepper being attacked for his weight. But even pre the dog situation, Mike Vick was always attacked for not having the right fundamentals or not working quite as hard. There's always those cold words that seem to get tossed around when we're talking about black quarterback.
You guys have any questions?
Yeah. It's funny. Do you think that maybe some of the difference, you know, like Caldwell just mentioned, Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick seems like they're kind of getting a pass. Do you think that maybe has anything to do with them being biracial?
Yes and no. I think that it, a lot for Russell Wilson, yes. I think that it definitely plays a factor, him being biracial. I think that Colin Kaepernick, though, is an interesting one. So we did have a little bit of controversy last year with the tattoos and that sort of and that situation. We had a guy write that ridiculous article. But I think that also with Russell Wilson is a really interesting case to me because in a way, like RG3, people view him as, quote, well-spoken. So I think he gets that sort of a pass where he's seen as more non-threatening and somebody that does everything the right way. But if you have a guy that has any sort of personality or flair to him, like a Cam Newton does not, you know, fit into a box of the way that people want him to act. He's cocky because he knows he's good, and he's going to tell you that he's good. It's been like that since he was in college. And I think that's always rubbed people the wrong way when it comes to Cam, but that's something that Russell doesn't have to worry about because they just, you know, say that Russell, you know, just grinds and just puts his head down and does his job.
And also, too, with all the hype, though, Cam Newton had, you know, Cam being the number one pick, Russell Wilson, you know, won the first round and how he just came in. And like you said, and two, the controversy with Cam Newton, too, you know, with Alvin. So it was that controversy, too, that followed. So even that is just, he was just that guy where, you know, people weren't going to find a reason not like him if it was going to be the controversy. It could have been something else. It was just something they just not too crazy about this guy.
Now, too,
you don't really, you know what I'm saying, like how he came in with the hype, though, when he did his rookie year, and then you saw how last year, well, he didn't have a season. He had, like, his rookie year. Then he's kind of now third year. You really don't hear much about him. It's all about RG3 and Luck and the other quarterbacks.
Well, it seems like after Cam's rookie year, I think he surprised a lot of people in his rookie year with his play. And he kind of knocked it out the park. It seems like last year people were almost looking for things and looking for reasons not to like him. I've never heard the media refer to a quarterback pouting on the sideline and his sideline demeanor as much as they did Cam Newton. It's almost like they were looking for something. You know, look at the look on his face, and it's like the look on his face. I mean, and this is after we didn't had, you know, quarterbacks, you know, cursing out their coaches. You know, the dude up in Chicago pushing his linemen, you know, but we're looking at Cam Newton, the pout on his face, because he's losing. Like, he's supposed to stand there with a big smile on it. Oh, we're getting our butts kicked. This is good. You know, it's like really? Are we really focusing on the pout on his face? Is that what it come to?
Yeah, it's interesting with Cam because I'm with you on that. Is that people always want to pick out the most random stuff about what Cam does. But I think that it's also interesting that people then try to downplay his season last year. I think that his second year in the league was actually better than people give it credit for. It just wasn't off the charts like his rookie season. So I think he's been doing just fine. I think that they need to put some more weapons around him. I mean,
exactly.
The most notable offensive draft pick that was a skill position player, I think, was Armonte Edwards, the guy from the wide receiver from Appalachian State. So, I mean, think about it. They're not putting guys around him or other young guys around him. They keep paying all of this money to these running backs that aren't that good. So they really need to get some actual talent around him and watch him lead the team to the playoffs.
I hope they give him the weapons because I'm going to say this, though. Everybody, same thing back in the day, being so critical of Donovan McNabb. But Donovan McNabb didn't have no weapons around him. He pretty much carried that offense, that team. You know, the defense was good, but he didn't have no weapons. I'll say this. If you gave the weapons Peyton Manning had to Donovan McNabb with them teams the Philadelphia Eagles had, yeah, McNabb would have won a couple of Super Bowls. And Peyton Manning had the best weapons money can buy, and he didn't even win the Super Bowl with Edgerrin James. But people don't want to talk about that. But I know our favorite caller, Tony O'Reilly, was going insane about that, about Peyton Manning.
But Mike, you also saw the Colts go 2-14 without him, and you saw them go 11-5 with Andrew Luck. The whole thing is, this is a quarterback driven league, head coach driven league.
Agreed, but still, yeah, he still didn't get his team. I was looking at, you know, all the criticism McNabb had. He still didn't get his team. I mean, that era. that time of one Super Bowl. I say two, but he didn't get one with Edgerrin James. And I'm just saying, but they want to put all the emphasis on Donovan McNabb. Why didn't he criticize Peyton Manning and all that stuff? And McNabb did pretty much less talent than what Peyton Manning had, and he didn't, you know, almost came close to the Super Bowl about four times, and probably the fifth time he got there.
Greg,
now,
do you think that maybe like dual threat quarterbacks, especially like black quarterbacks, do you think sometimes the teams overlook the deficiency on the offense, expecting the quarterback to pick up slack? Like, you know, like Vic, when he was in Atlanta, he never really had a wide receiver there either. You know, and like Mike mentioned, you know, McNabb never really, except when he got T.O., he never really had a wide receiver in Philadelphia. It seems like, you know, it seems like a lot of times, you know, you'll get the quarterbacks there, but they don't, you know, like you said with Cam Newton, they don't get the weapons to, you know, to show their talents off.
No, I would definitely think it's something to that. I think even if you think about it with Vic and the teams that he had, when he was out there rolling with Brian Finneran as his number one receiver, whereas the Falcons now have Matt Ryan as their quarterback, and they got Julio, they got Roddy White, Tony Gonzalez. I mean, they've got all kinds of weapons to throw for days out there. I think it's something to that, because I'm assuming that these general managers and coaches think that because they have these guys that have athleticism, that they're going to be able to make more plays happen, and therefore they should spend more time, you know, maybe worrying about the defense and maybe even the offensive line. But they lose sight of the fact that they also need to put some skill position guys around those players so that they can help. You just look at what happened when Dick was able to get to the Eagles in that first season before he got injured. I mean, when he had DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin with Shady McCoy, when he has weapons around him, he can perform. He did his fix this year, just that he needs to stay healthy.
Yeah, but too, with that offensive line Philadelphia had too, it was bad.
I got a question here. I kind of got two questions here. You mentioned earlier in regards to, you know, Cam Newton not fitting the role in which the media wants him to play. I'm taking a different look at this. Like, for example, RG3, he's kind of like the face of the black quarterback right now in the league. And I kind of refer to Donovan McNabb because he kind of fit the role what America wanted to see out of a black quarterback or a leader. And the media still attacked him, even if he was doing the right things. So I kind of just sense a trend. I kind of sense the seeds of the media starting to turn against RG3 at some point down the road, particularly if he has a good year. I think they're going to turn on him somewhere down the road, just like they've turned on Josh Freeman down here in Tampa. 2 years ago, he was the best thing going. Now the city wants him out, you know, and I think the same thing is happening to Cam Newton in Carolina at some point. So I guess my question is there any win-win situation for a black quarterback in regards to the media?
There could be. I think that what would have to happen, though, is that it would have to be a guy that stayed out of trouble and that won. So if you were able to continue to win, then you would be able to continue to have positive recognition put on you. So RG3 is a great example of this. I think right now we're seeing where he's rehabbing, he's injured. So people are starting to turn on him a little bit because he's getting still all of these accolades, but he's not actually doing anything right now, and he also hasn't won anything at the NFL level yet. So if that continues, where he continues to get all of the spotlight and endorsements and everybody talking about him, he's the face of the franchise, but they don't win, then I think that will end up hurting him. And, boy, don't let him get in any trouble. You do know that it's going downhill after that.
But, okay, I got a question then following that. When you say win, meaning they have to win a Super Bowl, because I think that's the standard for a black quarterback, because when you say win, when they had Donovan McNabb in Philadelphia, maybe after that third NFC championship game or that fourth NFC championship game, they were starting to question him. And so, I mean, you know, so and particularly when he was still going to the playoffs, but, you know, they weren't advancing to the, you know, as far as they wanted to. They were questioning Donovan McNabb. You know, he put the franchise wasn't even the same since he's left, and they weren't the same. He brought the franchise up, you know. So, I mean, I don't know. I just kind of feel like if you're a black quarterback, you got to be winning Super Bowls, basically. I mean, you can get to the playoffs. You're going to have some buzz. But eventually, after that second or third year, you're not winning a Super Bowl, the city's going to turn on you in the media.
Depending on what city, but I – oh, I didn't mean to cut you. Go ahead, Mr.
Yeah.
Smith.
No, it's fine. I was just saying, I definitely agree with that, though, about Donovan. You know, I think, though, at a certain point, they kept getting to the same point and couldn't quite get over the hump. Yeah, they made it to that Super Bowl, and that year, the T.O. came back from the leg injury. But I think also the fans were just tired of the fact that they couldn't get over the hump. But I definitely understand where you're coming from. With, you know, Donovan definitely won. Culpepper had success back in his day. I mean, it fell off towards the end, but he won with the Vikings. It really will come down to a Super Bowl.
Now,
I agree.
I got a follow-up question before everybody else does. Now, I'm just noticing something, like, even in the NBA, players and black leadership. Now, I understand the media is skeptical of black leadership. I mean, in terms of blacks in leadership position, you can even look at Obama. You can look at the black quarterback. But I'm talking about the players, the African-American players. For example, with the Donovan McNabb and T.O. I don't think T.O. respected Donovan McNabb's leadership, you know, as being the leader of the team. Is there some sort of culture among the – do you think there's a culture among the players that has a lack of black respect for black leadership? Even with the situation in, for example, in Pittsburgh with Mike Tomlin, the MO right now is he can't control the players. That's going to be the MO, I believe, for Kevin Sumlin in Texas A&M. He can't control the players. And the point I'm saying is there a bias for black players to respect black leadership? That's my question to you.
You know, it's a very, very interesting question, because if you ask players, and I've actually seen stuff on this recently, saying that in a football culture, you know, in the locker room, it's all about whether or not you can coach or whether or not you can play, and race doesn't ever play into it. But I don't believe that, and I have a hard time believing it, because it comes into factor in every other facet of life. So to answer your question, I believe that there is some distrust there, but I'm not sure that it's as much from the players, considering there is such a high percentage of black players. I think it comes from the top down. So I think that starts with the fact that you have a harder time for black coaches to get into the ranks and to really get into leadership positions or even front office positions, because owners and then GMs then have a bias as they try to make their selection. I think it starts up top and not necessarily with the players.
I guess I was going to chime in with Carzell when you were saying about Donovan McNabb. You know, you all were talking about saying, you know, finally officially Donovan McNabb retires, and of course the Philadelphia Eagles going to honor him retired. They were thinking, like, is he going to get booed? They would bring that up. Or majority, you know how Philly are, Philly fans can be and stuff like that. They were saying, well, majority clap for him, boo, or what? They were saying about that. So it's still, had he won maybe a Super Bowl, even one, I know, like Carzell said, win at least more than one, but maybe he had won one. I think fans, majority of all cheers, since he didn't, it wouldn't surprise me a bit if they booed, but it just shows you again, hey, man was never appreciated, really, really appreciated, like a Brett Favre or a Peyton Manning.
Yeah, I think that Donovan is going to be one of those guys that we're going to look back on that was really, really underrated for what he did on the field. Donovan doesn't help himself, let's be honest, some of the comments that he makes after he retired. But Donovan actually, I think, will go down as very underrated for what he did on the field.
Greg, how do you think the Rooney Rule, has it really affected the hiring of black coaches like it was intended to? You know, what do you think about it in general? I mean, is it a good tool, or is it more just, you know, just there for show? Or
no, I think that it's right now more of something for show. The spirit of the rule is great. I think that, you know, what it's intended to do is very, very good. But we're seeing time and time again that these interviews are really sham interviews just to say that you fulfilled the Rooney Rule requirement, where, yes, guys are getting an opportunity to get in front of executives, But how about they get the opportunity to actually win the job? There's been many examples of teams giving these guys these sham interviews where they already know who they're going to select. So I think that there needs to also be an extension of the rule. I think that they need to make that extend down to assistant coaches as well. I'm a fan of the rule. I just think that in execution and practice, it's actually, it doesn't work the way it should.
Like you said,
like they don't really rehire black coaches like they do with white coaches. It seems like if a black coach does get a chance, and if he loses his job, it seems like you just don't even like even hear of him anymore. Like they don't get recycled like a lot of these, you know, like a lot of these white coaches do and go to another, get a chance to go to another team and be successful. It just seems like, you know, you get your shot, either you succeed or you mess up. If you mess up, you know, you might not get another shot again for another, you know, 10 or 15 years. And it just, you know, like I said, that seems like a real issue to me.
I got a perfect example of that for you. Where's Lovie Smith coaching this year?
I was about to bring that up. I think based on the organization, I thought the team he probably should have got hired was the Jacksonville Jaguars when they went a defensive mind coach. So I'm thinking, why they didn't go at Lovie Smith?
Well, yeah, that would have been a good look for them.
You know what? I thought that while I like Lovie Smith as a head coach, I thought he made some bad hires among his offensive staff. I think that's ultimately what probably doomed him. During his tenure, on average, they had a bottom fourth offense. I mean, that's just totally not a good look, especially when you have the kind of defense that they fielded over the years. I love Lovie as a coach. I think next year he does definitely get a defensive coordinator job along with an assistant head coach title, probably. I'm not sure about head coach because I'm not sure about not so much his understanding of the offensive side of the ball, but just the hires that he tends to make when it comes to offensive football staff.
I'm not sure that he's going to take a defensive coordinator position, actually. I think he was offered that this year and refused to take it. So I think that Lovie believes, listen, I was a head coach for a lot of years. I was successful. I put in my time as a defensive coordinator in St. Louis and showed that I can do that. I'm a head coach. I should not have to go back to defensive coordinator.
I agree.
And also, too, you know, he had another year left on his contract, so, hey, at least he's still getting paid. You know, I think he's getting paid about $5 million. But I think that's pretty much doing them, too. I agree 150% with Jamal. He just could never find an offensive coordinator. I mean, he's been with the team for almost, you know, 10 years, and you're going through coordinators like that. It's just, I mean, just being honest and real with you, I don't think he will. The way he's looking, I don't think he's ever going to be a head coach in the NFL. But I think, I was going to say, if he wants to be a head coach, he'd probably be a good head coach in the college, right?
College would be interesting. I think he went to Tennessee, I want to say. I know he was always.
Yeah, because there was rumors about Tennessee a few years ago.
Yeah, he was connected to that Tennessee job, you know, just like John Gruden was. But Tennessee actually got it. Butch Jones is turning him around, I think. But no, I think that he'll stick with the pros. I think he's a pro coach.
Yeah, I think for college, I don't know. Particularly SEC, I don't know if that's really catered to the black coach right now. You know, I can see black coaches at Tennessee. They would get scrutinized out of this world for every little thing he did. So, and I just don't see it. I mean, the guy at Vanderbilt, I can understand that. They don't necessarily have a big fan base in comparison to Tennessee or Florida or Alabama. I just couldn't see it. I couldn't see a black – I'm not saying they're not qualified for the job. I just – in terms of the scrutiny that they're going to get when they get there. I mean, every little thing's going to be examined. And I don't know, you know, if the culture right now is ready for that. But that's just my take on it. I don't know.
It depends on what setting, what town, you know, city, state. It depends on what region of the country he goes to.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It depends on where he ends up going and what the culture is like. It's funny, as you mentioned, James Franklin at Vanderbilt, he's actually a little bit upset that they won 9 games, which is a minor miracle at Vanderbilt, and their season ticket sales didn't go up. So I wouldn't be surprised if he leaves after a year or two. But it definitely would depend on where the coach ends up going. But there's a reason why in college you don't see as many black coaches as hardly any. It's because a lot of those schools are in, you know, smaller rural towns, and it's just more difficult to sell your fan base on that.
Yeah.
Look at, too, you were talking about the black head coaches class. Look at the success of Charlie Strong. It took him that long, and look what he's done in Louisville. You know his name is going to be popping up again for, another program comes up. His name, of course, is going to pop up. And look at what that guy, David Shaw, is doing at Stanford. So, you know, his name is going to be ringing again. So, I mean, it depends on where part of the country, you know, city, state. I mean, it could happen. I think, like I said, I think, you know, Lovie Smith will benefit going to that route next year. If it's pride, because he is stubborn. It's pride. That's the only thing that's going to hold him back.
I got a question.
I think you got to stay there, but it's just hard to get a spot. Like you said, Lovie Smith, he hasn't been able to come back. You know, you look at guys like, you know, look at Ray Rhodes, you know. He hasn't been a coach since he was the coach of the Eagles, you know. Not a head coach, at least, and haven't really, you know, had a serious chance at being a coach, you know, for any other team. So it's just, you know, it seems like a lot of these, like I say, a lot of, you know, these other coaches, they kind of get recycled, you know, guys like Mike Shanahan. But they don't, you know, it just seems they don't do the same with the black coaches. And, you know, I think if you get a shot, you know, you look at, you get a shot, you know, you got to take it. But if I were a guy like Charlie Strong and I'm in a program that's comfortable with me and they can give me some long-term commitment and I can improve that program, like I say, as long as I'm happy there and getting the money, I'd probably stay there, to tell you the truth. You know, it's risky out there for black coaches to get, you know, when you ain't got no job, you know. Look at
right.
Tyrone Willingham. You haven't, you know, where is he coaching at now?
You don't even hear nothing about him, yeah.
I kind of got a question now. In regard to the black media, like black journalists right now. Not necessarily journalists, but analysts right now. I'm kind of noticing certain things, particularly with analysts. Like when I look at somebody like a Stephen A. Smith, you know, when he's on First Take, I kind of feel like they talk about racial issues on a show like that, but I kind of feel like the black analysts are trying to qualify, like, they're not trying to step on anybody's toes. Like, for example, today, you know, they were talking about the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington or something like that. And, you know, he was talking about how we've came so far and how much we got to go. But then he started criticizing black people, you know. I kind of feel like when they get on racial issues, they have to criticize black people to try to criticize the black athlete to try to come off like, you know, as acceptable. Am I making sense what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Kind of,
I'm
like,
no,
like,
I
yeah,
get
kind
what
like
you're saying.
Yeah,
it's kind like
even
they
it
have,
out, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
they
it's
have
like
to even it out. They have to qualify their statements with another statement.
And I kind of sense that it's not just in sports, it's in these political annals. I noticed that on Fox News a lot. You know, they don't want to step on toes too much. They want to, you know, they want to say those things to make sure, you know, they're acceptable. I mean, do you think that's affecting sort of journalism in general?
Yeah, I think that what ends up happening is that they don't want to be known as the quote race baiter, the guy that always has to pull the race card. But at the same time, they want people to come to them about issues about race because they don't want it to be an all-white panel like you see a lot in politics, like on a Meet the Press or something like that, where you'll have, you know, 5 middle-aged white guys talking about black issues. So they still want you to come to them, but they really end up having to tiptoe around certain issues. for fear of really, you know, angering their bosses or the other hosts that are on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of it. I think, like I said, I think that extends a lot past, you know, just sports journalism too. And you know, like, I mean, look at a, you know, you look at the president. He can't really say nothing about black issues, you know, having to say something, you know, contrasting what he does. You know, so it's kind of, you know, you have to walk a, you know, you have to walk a tightrope, you know, because like you said, you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be the guy, you know, you don't want to be the race guy, you know, but you kind of do want to still be able to talk about those issues. But you know, that's a good point, Tucker. I've noticed that, you know, that they do that a lot too.
Yeah. Now, different platform, you know, he's the president of the United States.
Now, I have a question now. Well, two questions. What's your take on the Riley Cooper incident? Let's go through that first question right there. What's your take on the Riley Cooper?
You see how that died down?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that. You know, it's real interesting what happened with Riley. It was the biggest story going for about a week there. And I understand that, you know, we have short attention spans now, and there's so much going on, and, you know, there's so much news being put out there. We know everything now, right? But that situation, it felt to me that when they sent him away for that close counseling, that what they were saying is, we need the heat to die down a little bit, then you can come back, get work back in with the team, maybe you catch a couple touchdowns, and people will be on to something else in the next news cycle. And that's pretty much exactly what happened. It basically did go away. Now, it'll come back a little bit should there be any sort of incident. So if, you know, somebody is caught blatantly taking a cheap shot at him, or he happens to perform very well, then we're going to see, we'll hear about it again, but it definitely won't be as much as the scrutiny was, you know, when it first came out.
I was going to say this, though. I think it probably might be brought up probably first Sunday on the pregame show, you know, Fox, ESPN, NFL Network, CBS, of course, they're going to bring something up to the extent on that.
Yeah, they'll probably bring something up about it. But, again, it'll be very interesting to see which people will say anything about it and to see if anybody tiptoes around the situation. Because they need to call the situation what it was. It was kind of a farce. Like, it's just weird to me that you could do something like that and then just basically get the equivalent of the slap on the wrist. I'm very interested to know what his teammates really thought behind closed doors, because, you know, they have to publicly say that they're behind their teammate, even though some of them actually were honest, like LeSean McCoy, and said that he wasn't, you know, he never could respect him again. But Mike Vick came out and said that, you know, they had to move on. And the problem with that, and when you get into a tricky situation, is I didn't have people coming at me saying, well, if Riley forgave him, why can't all the rest of y'all? So you end up speaking for an entire group of people when you say stuff like that.
Yep.
And I was going to say, your take on it, I know you saw the video. You think that he had said that word more than once, the way he had said it?
Yeah, man, that rolled right off his tongue. That was not the first time. And the thing that struck me is the girl in the video repeating it like they had just been saying it all the time. That's what kind of got me and struck me, is that everybody just kind of, nobody went, oh, I can't believe he did that. Oh, no, Riley, don't do that. Everybody just kept rolling.
I'm sorry, Clauso, you had a two-part question?
Well, no, I want my question to be the last question, but you can go. It's about black
okay,
sports
great.
Online. Yeah.
Okay, Greg, what do you think about the recent situation with Johnny Manziel? And they just said they're going to suspend him for half a game compared to some of the, you know, everybody's talking about how Terrell Pryor was suspended for 5 games, Dez Bryant was suspended for the whole season. What do you think about that?
Right. I think that, you know, essentially what this came down to was that they didn't find the money trail. You know, what happened with Money Manziel is that he got paid straight cash, homie, as Randy Moss would say, and it was, you know, hard for them to prove that he got paid. So if once that happened and once he lawyered up and once the school lawyered up and the NCAA wasn't able to bully them like they were able to bully Dez Bryant or A.J. Green or Terrell Pryor, then it was going to be all she wrote. Now, I'm sure A&M was very quick to do this joint statement and, you know, we're going to go ahead and self-punish here by doing the half a game. To them, that worked out just fine. But, I mean, come on, everybody with half a brain knows that nobody that claims that they hate signing autographs repeatedly in interviews is going to sit down and sign 4,400 pieces of memorabilia for free out of the goodness of their heart when we know that this guy got jerk tendencies. We know that that's just not going to happen.
Exactly. Like you said, okay, I agree. The money trail, like I say, he's great cash, so yeah, it's hard to prove that he took it or not, so exactly.
It's interesting you said something about his lawyer. I really didn't think about that. Do you think Dez Bryant and Terrell Pryor, you know, well-off family, do you think that if they were to report those top lawyers that Manziel's parents hired, they would have been sanctions too?
No, you know, I think that they would have probably been able to fight that a little bit better, especially that Dez Bryant situation. I mean, Dez got popped for a year for having dinner. I mean, that's really what that came down to, is that he had a dinner at Deion Sanders' house and got suspended for the entire year. And they say, you can say all you want that he really got suspended because he lied. But even if he lied about having the dinner, you still don't get a year. A.J. Green got 4 games of suspension for selling his jersey for, I believe, less money than Johnny Manziel allegedly got for signing those autographs. So, no, I definitely think that if they were able to afford those lawyers, then there's no way that they would have been suspended the way that they were.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, the man, I mean, that's why I was saying with the NCAA with some of this. That's that man's jersey. If that man wants to sell it, he should be able to sell it without NCAA stepping in line and doing what they do. But it's just, everything's just fly away. Like we were saying, like a friend of mine was saying, well, I know Terrell Pryor and A.J. Green and Dez Bryant are heated over this, you know, with Johnny Manziel getting to have a game.
Right. With all the stuff that's been going on with the NCAA, do you see a major overhaul coming to the NCAA?
Yeah, I would say that a major overhaul is coming, but it's not necessarily because of these rules. I think that it's because of the money, and that always rules everything. That's the reason why we're going to have this playoff. And the reason that we will have some sort of overhaul is because these big named schools will realize that they can make more money and get more TV revenue, get more cuts of jersey sales, more cuts of ticket sales if they just do away or cut out the middleman with the NCAA. They're starting to figure out that we don't necessarily need the NCAA to have, say, a Big Ten network or an SEC network that's launching next year. Or the Pac-12 network, even though they're struggling to get on DirecTV. Eventually, and I would say within 5 years, we'll have some sort of major shakeup with the NCAA.
5 years?
Players will eventually receive money, services, or some type of stipend?
Yes, I think that they should receive some sort of stipend. I think that, for me, I think a happy medium, because people are resistant to change and won't want to go all the way to just giving them, like, large salaries and having agents and all of that. People are afraid of that. So if you give a stipend during the off season, and then if that player is good enough or fortunate enough to earn extra money for their school based off of their name, then that money should then be placed into a fund, and then once they either graduate or leave school, they get all of that money. That way, what happens is it's not just the Wild Wild West with kids getting just a bunch of cash all the time. And I think the inadvertent thing that would happen is that kids will be more likely to stay in school and either A, maybe take advantage of the education, or B, actually work on their skills in either basketball or football so that they were ready for the draft, because we see a lot of guys come out of school early solely for the fact that they need to provide for their families and they need to make some money. So I think that would definitely help with that if they just had some sort of money in their pocket you know, during the off season.
Okay. Yes, that definitely would be a big help. I think, fortunately, you know, it's going to be a story like this again, I mean, until they do some change. Well, we're going to constantly hear something like this all the time, every year. Might hear something else this season, where it might be another player or somebody, you know, that did something they investigated. I mean, until they do something with it, it's going to constantly happen. I hate to say it, but mostly with us, you know, black athletes, because, you know, a lot come from, you know, like you said, not trying to provide for their family. So, of course, we're going to hear stories, and might be some star player or key player on one of the teams that's going to a bowl game. They find something out, might get suspended because, you know, he took money or something.
Right.
It got to change.
Okay. All right, Claudio, you want to go ahead?
Well, yeah, my question is, I have a lot of friends that know I'm subscribing to Black Sports Online. They're not black, the ones I'm talking about. And what would be your message to people that say, you know, why should it be called Black Sports Online? What if we had White Sports Online? Would there be a problem? What's your response to that statement right there?
Oh boy, that one is the second part of that about what if we have White Sports Online is completely ridiculous to me because you already have White Sports Online. White Sports Online is called everything else. ESPN is essentially White Sports Online. That's what Fox is. SI. NBC, all of that stuff, that's basically what that is. So to say that is a little ridiculous. It's as crazy as the what if we had a White History Month statement. Like,
yeah.
we need to retire all of that. So why the site is called Black Sports Online, there's a few different reasons, but the most interesting one to me at this point is that now it gives us something to talk about. That's another extra thing for you or anyone else, because you'd be amazing how many times all of us get asked that, to say, hey, can you explain that? Or, hey, why is that like that? Or even as a way for you to think that we have another expertise or another voice that we can lend to a situation, which oftentimes is true. But as you know and your friends know that you mentioned that you don't happen to be white, if you read the site is diverse. The site covers everything. If you go and look at the site from today and just look at all of the different updates that we had throughout the day, it covers everything, all sports, you know, the drama, the twerk videos, everything is up there. So everybody is covered when it comes to the site.
Also, I mean, I was going to say, I get to ask our perspective since in sports, you know, with basketball and football, you know, we're dominating, so it's good. Like you said, we have our own, you know, TV stations and networks on TV to have it on our side, you know, perspective, you know, having, you know, black writers like yourself, Mr. Smith, to talk about our issues and stuff, because we know our culture, I mean, we're different, you know, we're different from, you know, Caucasians and other, you know, races, so it's good to have our perspective, having someone come relate to us, talk about what's going on, who really knows what's going on.
Right, I appreciate that. And I think that that's one of the things, too, is that just having sometimes it's not a bad thing to be able to read or watch or listen to voices that you think understand where you're coming from. And even if, you know, people that are not black read the site, you still are able to pick up on that perspective and to be able to enjoy the site, you know, based on, you know, just how good the site is and not just the fact that that is called Black Sports Online.
Well, all right. I guess that's it. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Thank you for coming on the show. And you will be on the Cold Hard Truth hopefully next week to discuss Black Sports Online and Nebraska football with Matthew Mong on the Cold Hard Truth next week. Again, we'd like to thank you. If you want to read a lot of more of his work, you can go to blacksportsonline.com. It's also, don't you have Black Sports Online on Twitter also?
Yeah, on Twitter, it's BLK Sports Online.
Yeah, so definitely, you know, check it out. You know, if you're for African American, you want to hear things from your perspective, check out blacksportsonline.com. All right, thank you again, Mr. Smith, and definitely we probably will get in touch with you in the future. We definitely want you to come back.
Yeah, not a problem.
We appreciate
you having me. No problem. We definitely your insight, and definitely I definitely enjoyed, you know, chatting with you, Mr. Smith.
Yeah, appreciate it, folks.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. Okay, that was Greg Smith from Black Sports Online. I'd like to once again just thank him for calling in. We had a good talk with him. If any callers want to call in, the number is 347-237-5539. Right now, let's move on to our we're gonna move on to our second hour. Gotta get talking with some NFL. Well, actually, I want to wrap up this Urban Meyer thing. We started talking. Actually, it was maybe about a couple of weeks ago. We started talking about Urban Meyer and the effects that some of these coaches had in smaller cities, and how much control they had over what's being released and what wasn't released. I think that might have been even about a month ago. We talked about that here on TNT Firestorm, and we also had personal insight from a couple of our callers about the way Urban Meyer ran his program, about a couple of other players that had issues going on at University of Florida. And now it's starting to come up in the mainstream media that Aaron Hernandez was on PCP and had multiple instances that might have been covered up, more than likely were covered up by Urban Meyer and University of Florida. What do you think about these revelations, Tex? I mean, is this anything we didn't expect to happen? I mean...
Well, hey, man, didn't we talk about this about 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, favorite caller, Antonio Wiley.
We were talking about this about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I was looking at the story last night. Now, you know what? I don't know how truthful it is that Hernandez was on drugs. I don't know anything about that. But I mean, you know, 2 weeks ago we were discussing this. We were discussing this, and just over the past few weeks, I've just been thinking in my head, you know, since we talked about it that night, I just kept on thinking, like, man, how does stuff like this not get out? What are we talking about? How does it not get out? I'm like, man, it's got to come out at some point. It's going to come back on Urban Meyer. And, it's, you know, it's still kind of in its early stages right now. But we just have to see where it goes. I mean, but you know, we were talking about this, so you know, there's no surprise, you know, from us. But you know, let's see where it goes.
Could this possibly end his career? I mean, we look at different coaches we've seen in situations like this. You know, you look at Butch Davis. He still hasn't been here. You know, he hasn't been coaching since he was at North Carolina. Excellent college coach. You know what he brings to the table. You go back even farther. You look at Gary Barnett at University of Colorado. He has not coached since he was at Colorado, and he was, you know, he was top coach. And it just seems like when these guys get caught covering stuff up, I don't know if maybe they're being blackballed or maybe, you know, like I say, that I don't know. I mean, can affect the sanctions over a coach who switches schools, or maybe if he quits coaching for a certain amount of time? I mean, because that's, you know, that's one of our callers saying that he was almost certain when Urban Meyer left University of Florida, because he basically knew a storm was coming. And I mean, is this, you know, like I said, could this affect him at Ohio State? Could he possibly get suspended? Do you think he should be suspended if he comes out that he was covering things up?
It depends on how deep it goes. You know, it's like Wiley was telling us. I mean, it's all kinds of stuff. So we just have to see how far, you know, people start investigating. We just have to see how, you know, what Morpheus say, how deep does a rabbit hole go? We just, you know, we got to find out.
We'll find out, tomorrow, if the storm might be hitting tomorrow, because I'm from that Rolling Stone magazine supposed to come out. So, of course, you're going to be hearing about that. And then, ironically, it comes out on the first day, you know, the first games of college football. So, man, they had the time of that was right on that footage story. But, I mean,
it's gonna be
it, 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 his name going to be linked. I mean, if it's going to be Dak, of course, it's not going to go away because then it's going to be bring about, you know, with the same situation, you know, Aaron Hernandez, you know. Of course, it might be some stuff come out with that with his trial and all that other stuff. So until this Aaron Hernandez thing and once they finally get that together and it's over with, whatever the verdict is, if he's guilty or not, you know, his name definitely going to probably going to be leaking around with it. Probably for the rest of this whole season coming up, his name probably going to be here related to Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah. Well, did you have anything you want to add about this, Carlo?
Not particularly. I mean, it just shows that, you know, it was just something suspicious when they all, when he was indicted, man, University of Florida was quick to try to get rid of his name. He took his brick off.
I've never seen that outside of how they did. Well, actually, they didn't even do Joe Paterno like that. They waited for a little while. But I've never seen anything that happened that quick. I mean, I'm surprised. Even though, you know, odds are against it, just think, what if he's innocent? Sure, I mean, think about it. They took his brick off. They took him off the video game. They basically erased him from anything that to do with Florida or the Patriots. I mean, what if that dude is innocent? I mean, you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. But, you know, this is America, and, you know, we instead of going by the court of law, we go by the court of public opinion. So that's
exactly.
Yeah, that,
you saw, that's, and you saw even court. And you saw how the Patriots.
What'd you say?
Play it, Claudio.
Okay, go. I was like, you see how the Patriots came that time before everything came out, how they just cut them before they got out and put everything out. Like, they ain't never seen that. You know, I just cut them like that, you know?
Yeah. It seems like I heard that he may get off for some reason. Something tells me. I don't know, but I doubt
it. I heard that, too. I guess because they were saying, with some of the stuff with the article or whatever they were saying, but I heard that, too, boo. Man, he's already indicted for the murder already, so, you know.
I mean, like I said, there's no witness, and there's a lot of circumstantial evidence. So anytime you have those two, you always have a great possibility of him getting off, actually. I mean, I don't even think they found an actual murder weapon. They found a gun, but they haven't said if that's the gun that was, used to murder Mr. Lloyd.
Yeah, last week I heard about that.
Continue to follow that. You know, more than likely, Urban Meyer, he's going to have to release a statement about this coming up before the season. I mean, he'd have to. I'd be surprised if he didn't. So, you know, we'll follow up on that when it comes out. But let's move on to our NFL hour. We're going to move back into our pretender contender. We want to get this done for the season starts. Right now, we're going to go to the AFC West. And I hate to say it, but we're going to start off at the bottom. I'm not even going to say the name of the city. I'm just going to say the Raiders.
Hey, Oakland Raiders, baby.
calm down, Mike. We got
Raiders. Hey, you got Frisco, so, Mike.
but this is my hometown, and they're not looking too good. 4-12 season. They're just not figuring out the match might have the quarterback. No duh. Okay. What do you think? Oakland Raiders are contenders. Give me some points I can be happy about. Because I know they're not contenders. Give me some positive points. Big text.
Yeah, they're pretenders, but you know, their quarterback situation now bears watching. You know, what we saw last week with Terrell Pryor being able to move the ball to score points against the Bears. I texted you, Mike. You have to start Terrell Pryor. He's moving the ball like this. Matt Flynn hasn't moved the ball yet this offseason, and if Tom Fry gets in the game, he moves a rock. That next morning, Dennis Allen is talking about, oh, okay, well, we have to take a look at our quarterback position. We have to see what's going on there. And lo and behold, Terrell Pryor is taking the first-team snaps. He's starting the game tomorrow. He's getting the majority of the first-team work tomorrow. But The Raiders are pretenders. You know, I mean, that's a given. They are pretenders, but they're interesting. They're interesting if Terrell Pryor is the starting quarterback. It helps McFadden. It helps Denarius Moore. It helps their speed guys a lot if Terrell Pryor is in the game. And, again, it definitely helps the running game with McFadden.
I mean,
but still pretenders, though.
Yeah, do you think that, I mean, in my opinion, I think it maybe it's your best before. You can't get any better from up. Do you think that if Pryor comes out as a starter, they might move Matt Flynn? Because Tyler Wilson and even undrafted dude Matt McGloin out of Penn State have both had a pretty good preseasons in camps. So, I mean, do you think there might be a possibility of, even though, like I said, I think his value is greatly diminished now if he can't win this job out again. But do you think there's any chance of moving Matt Flynn?
I mean, who's going to trade for him? Who's going to trade for that salary? That's what, $5, $6 million? Who's going to trade for that salary?
Yeah,
that's
not
good. I say the scenario, I mean, if it does happen, let's say if a quarterback goes down, like let's say a team, you know, that's in the hunt, you know, doing a trade deadline during the season, somebody might make a move. If they don't have a, you know, starters down and the backup is not playing too good.
Yeah. Yeah, good.
But I was going to say this too. What if Matt Flynn gets cut? Never know.
Tyler Wilson from Arkansas and undrafted Matt McGloin. Matt McGloin, I kind of followed him at Penn State. He was never the best quarterback, but he's a battler, man. He played well. Yeah, he's going out there and battling. You know, he battled at Penn State, and you know, so it's interesting. But we'll see. Interesting if they did cut Matt Flynn. I guess that'd be a way. You know, Bryce Butler too. Speaking of bright points for the Raiders, he's another guy who's really stepped up. Seventh round pick out of San Diego State. He was originally at USC. He kind of got lost in the shuffle there with all the wide receivers that he had. But he's 3 and can run a 4.3. And you know, when you combine those two, like you know, he's a five star coming out of high school. Like I say, he just kind of got lost in the shuffle and rebind, you know, guys like Robert Woods and Marquise Lee. But, you know, like I say, he's shown potential. And, you know, right now he's battling for the number 2 spot. So, you know, that's another bright spot for the Raiders. Hello?
Yes. What about the Raiders? They're not a good organization right now. I mean, I didn't like the fact they fired that Hugh Jackson, and I really don't like what that GM is doing. That new guy in town, whoever his name is,
Reggie McKenzie.
Yeah, man, they need to get that guy out, man. Because obviously, that when he fired Hugh Jackson, that was not smart of him to do that. So. Just get him out, man. He's messed that franchise up, and I think they're the worst team in the league.
Well, to add on to that, the one thing about this, I think I don't know if every move McKenzie made has been great, but here's the thing. You remember where the Raiders were before McKenzie got there, over the cap, bad contracts. Going in the next offseason there, they will have $70-plus million in cap space. So, you know,
that's a good point, Tex. That's something that's needed to be done in Oakland for years, you know. But, like I say, if you know the Raiders, you know, when Al Davis, when he was still running things, he never really wanted them to go through a full rebuilding process. So he would always bring in these high-priced, low-talented free agents to try to fill in the roster to at least put on a good show, and it just wasn't working. And like I said, at least McKenzie, I'm surprised Mark Davis is letting him do it. He probably wanted him to do it, but it, you know, before his dad was alive. But McKenzie, you know, he's clearing out that riffraff, man. So I can't get mad at him for doing that.
And well, I mean, McFadden
have a lot of space next year.
Well, McFadden said he wants to be a Raider for life, which makes no sense to me. But hey, it is what it is, man. I hope Terrell Pryor does well. That's the best I hope for. But as of right now, they're the worst team in the league, in my opinion.
Well, you gotta remember, McFadden is, you know, he is living and playing in possibly the greatest city in America. So, you know, that happens when you're in a city like that.
I need to get a new stadium. I guess he's going to sign in on the Raiders, Mike. I will say, Terrell Pryor, he's the future, man. I like Terrell Pryor. I was a big fan of him at Ohio State, you know. Hey, I got a quarterback. That's why I say this. You know, you're not about the Raiders, but, I mean, the future looks good with him as your quarterback. Just build some pieces around the team, around him. You know, everything will be good. I want to chime in with Clausell saying about Hugh Jackson. I do agree, but then, too, Hugh Jackson was power. He was controlling. When Al Davis passed, I mean, he pretty much had final say in everything. He's on the contract. He only came to Al Davis.
Yeah.
But since then, that was the reason why, you know, he went out.
The decision it had, even that, though, it really didn't have much to do with Reggie McKenzie wanting to have his own guy in there, you know. And that's, you know, like I say, when you're a new GM, if things are going to go wrong, you want your own thing to go wrong. So, I mean, like I said, I can't fully blame him for getting rid of Hugh Jackson. You know, if you want to make a mistake, you want to make your own mistake. You don't want to make Al Davis's mistake. I can't really blame him for doing it. Like that.
You don't blame him for getting rid of Hugh Jackson? I blame him for getting rid of Hugh Jackson.
I mean, Clausell, you know the game. I mean, the guy who comes in wants that guy. Obviously, you know, he wasn't his guy, you know. But I was going to say this, though. I mean, he comes from Green Bay. Everybody was all critical on Ted Thompson. You see how Ted Thompson is right now probably the best, you know, GM president in football right now. You see what he's done with Green Bay. I mean, I give the guy, this is his, you know, probably really his first full year being there. I give him maybe, you know, give him a couple more years. You know, we had to talk a couple years from now. Then we can say how the Raiders are, what he's done of bringing in players and stuff. So, I mean, right now, I mean, I give him a few more years before saying if he's good or bad. And especially, like you said, the Raiders were pretty much in a flux when he got there. And he did clear up some cap space. And then, too, the man didn't even have a first-round pick. You know, so, I mean, give it time. You got to be patient. Give it time. But like I said, the future, the bright note is the Raiders do got a quarterback. And Terrell Pryor, man, he, like I said, they got a quarterback.
Let's move on to the Kansas City Chiefs.
I'm sorry, what
are
you saying? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I don't know if they got a quarterback, but they got, you know, they got somebody that can move the rock. They got somebody to give them the best chance to win right now. That's what they have.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I mean, he's good. I wish him well, but I'm not convinced that Terrell Pryor is the future. I ain't convinced of that.
Like I said, probably not going to get. Terrell Pryor has the same skill set as Cam Newton.
Yeah.
If you look at
they both were big, tall, got big arms.
Yeah, but when the game's on the line, man.
But he did win a bowl game. He did beat Arkansas, right? I forgot about that. He did win that bowl game. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, when the game's on the line, is he going to deliver? And I'm not convinced that he's going to do that. I need to tell
you
more.
I hope he does. Is Cam Newton going to deliver? I've seen him do it before.
That's the thing in college. I've seen Cam Newton do it before. Yes, when the game was on the line, he delivered. LSU versus Auburn, he delivered. Alabama versus Auburn, he delivered. Okay? But I didn't see the same out of Terrell Pryor at Ohio State. That's just the point I'm saying. So
ball at Ohio. He's going to be the Heisman favorite coming in before he got suspended. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know that.
He sure was.
I don't want to argue about Terrell Pryor, man. I really don't want to. This is a waste of time to argue about Terrell Pryor.
This just came into my head about the Raiders coach. You think Allen survives this year, or you think the Raiders might go in a different direction as head coach?
Who knows?
Yeah, I mean,
I really don't know.
Another year left. It's only a second year. You got another year left.
But let's move on because we got a lot to fit in. Let's move on to specifically the worst team in the league, the Kansas City Chiefs at 2-4 last year. This is a team, like I said, it's a highly talented team. They got a new quarterback, Alex Smith. They got a new left tackle, number one pick, and Eric Fisher. And what do you guys think about them? Are they pretenders? This is a team. If there's any team I've seen that can make a complete turnaround, it looks like it should be this team, just from the talent that's on their roster. You got guys like Eric Berry and Jamal Charles, Dwayne Bowe. You know, you have a lot of talent. Eric Johnson. That's a lot of talent on your team. So, I mean, I think this is a team. Could Alex Smith be the guy to turn this around? Could this be, you know, cause, like I said, could this, they lost down the ball, though, but could they make a big turnaround here? What do you think, Tex?
I still got to call Kansas City pretenders. They are a very talented team, but and why, you know, it's, well, while Smith, while he was a game manager and he, you know, he did some things with the 49ers. I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, you have him playing quarterback, your offense is going to be limited. I mean, he was limited in a run first offense with San Francisco. And now you're in Kansas City with Andy Reid, who wants to, is, you know, this is a pass balanced offense, this is a West Coast offense. Where you want, he wants the quarterback to pass 35, 40 times a game. This is not an offense that fits Alex Smith. They'll want to throw down the field. They won't be able to do it, just like the Niners weren't able to do it. Now, having Jamal Charles in that offensive line definitely helps. Having Dwayne Bowe helps. But, you know, your quarterback makes you a pretender.
Okay. What do you think about that, Carlos?
Absolutely not. They are not a contender. They're talented. I call them the Tampa Bay West. You know, very similar situation. Well, Tampa Bay has a better quarterback than Kansas City. You sound like one of these sportscasters here in Tampa when you just said that, Victor. But anyway, that's another conversation right there.
And Mike, I remember you was raving about. And Mike, I remember you was raving about Freeman too.
Nothing. Because I remember some sportscaster here in Tampa said that Josh Freeman is not as good as Alex Smith. I was like, are you kidding me? But anyway, that's another conversation in itself. Yeah, that's the issue right there, Alex Smith. You will not win a championship with Alex Smith. You know, and I think that
can't wait with Josh Freeman either. But okay,
I'd rather have Josh Freeman than Alex Smith. But. Yeah, that's the issue right there. It's the quarterback. I don't think you're going to win with that quarterback. And I think they made a big mistake. They made a huge mistake by trading that number one pick. They should have got a quarterback. They should have got Geno. I would have got Geno as number one.
This
but, you know,
coming off a 13-3 season, Clavel.
Well, yeah, when you're handing the ball off to Frank Gore and you got a defense, you got a dynamite defense, of course you're going to be he's coming off a 13-3.
That's what he's going to be.
I mean, come on, man.
Think about it. Is he not going to be doing the same thing in Kansas City? Off to
my said is, though, we're at the time with a time where San Francisco would have beaten the Giants that year and they went to the Super Bowl, where Alex Smith would have still been quarterback last year going into the bowl, might have been something different.
And that's the reason that San Francisco lost that game to the Giants, is because of Alex Smith and his core horrible play. So, you know, no, they're a pretender. Kansas City is a pretender because of the quarterback position.
Even though Alex Smith completed 70% of his passes last year.
Yeah, of course, play action pass. Handing it off to Frank Gore, you know, Vernon Davis. I mean,
wow.
AJ McCarron has a pretty high completion percentage, too, with all those athletes. So did Ken Dorsey, you know.
Well, those are college quarterbacks in the NFL. Smith won Heisman. He was number one pick in the draft, but anyway. All right,
I know that was a waste of a pick too.
Yeah, let's move on.
What about me, Kelly Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Kelly Mike, you got to ask.
What do you think about it, Steve?
Well, I'm going to be a different from Tex and Clyzel. I'm going to say, you know, the Chiefs were the team I picked to win the division last year. I say they right in the middle. It either could be a pretender or a contender battling Denver because they do got the talent, both sides of the ball. They're young. I mean, Alex Smith's record, though, I mean, like what he did, he was a number one pick, and then, like you said, San Francisco did get to the NFC Championship with him as the quarterback, and he did do well last year before he got hurt and Cap came in. So, I mean, he's a guy. I mean, it's interesting to see how he's going to work with Reed in the system, but obviously he's been in the league for a while, so he's not like a rookie quarterback. But I think he you know, he's not Peyton Manning, he's not Tom Brady, but he do have some weapons in Kansas City, too, with Dwayne Bowe, Jamal Charles, and that tight end they got there. You know, so I think he got tools there for him to succeed, but just the question is, you know, will he be a fit for Andy Reid in that system there in Kansas City? But, you know, if this player, he's playing well and they're doing what they do, hey, watch out for Kansas City.
Ah, come on, Mike. I know I didn't hear you say that. You had to win a division last year. I know I didn't hear you say that.
Yes, I did.
That's blasphemous. That's
by their 2-14 season.
That's ridiculous.
I didn't think Matt Castle was going to be that. I mean, he just like you said, lost his kind. I didn't think he was going to be that bad.
Mike had to
win the division. They probably did win the number one draft pick.
win the division over Peyton Manning.
Yeah, and that's ridiculous. I mean, they should have drafted Geno. I would have drafted Geno as number one pick. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be an all-star or anything like that, but, I mean, that was stupid what they did. They drafted an offensive lineman, number one. Now, I understand
well,
it's
no,
an important
no,
position.
You can't overvalue a stud left tackle.
I'm with you there. I'm not lying to you, but they should have drafted a quarterback at number one. They should have drafted Geno. But it just says that they don't want a Geno Smith at quarterback.
If they would have took Geno number one, then, of course, they would expect Geno to probably come in to start. Isn't it my impression for him to come in to start? Seeing the sets you see of Luck and RG3,
no
other guys.
There was no chance of him going number one. There's a reason. Like I said, I believe there's a reason why these guys get drafted. These dudes get paid to do this. There's a reason why he got drafted there.
At the right spot.
This was number one. It just happened. Out of nothing, there was a reason for it. That dude was not a number one. Like I said, I didn't like him at West Virginia. I don't think he's going to be very good in New York. There's a reason why he was drafted where he was drafted.
Why you don't think he's going to be very good in New York?
I don't think he was very good in Virginia, and I don't think New York is a garbage team. Like I said, I don't think you could put any quarterback outside of Tom Brady or Peyton Manning you could put on them, and they would be good. They're not, like I say, it's not the quarterback. I mean, like I say, it's not the quarterback there. It's not. It's the team. You can't have a team where your best receiver is San Antonio Holmes and your number two is Stephen Hill. And you're talking.
That was a big
plus. Me and Tex was just going over their running backs. It's a team full of misfits. Who is their running back? Do you even know who it is?
No.
I don't even know right now.
Joe K. Bell? Isn't it Joe K. Bell, Tex?
No, it's Joy Bell is with the Lions. Bilal Powell.
Chris Ivory, right?
Until Chris Ivory gets in shape.
He wasn't even really a starter, a full-time starter.
Like I said, they're a team full of misfits.
Only thing they really got positive on the offensive side, they do got two good all-pro linemen in Nick Mangold and the Ricochet Ferguson.
Those don't score.
I like Mangold. I've never really, like I say, I've never really been sold on Ferguson as game. I don't think he's as good as people think he is either. But like I say, they're a team full of misfits with an overrated coach, and a GM who makes bad personnel decisions. So,
I'm a Rex Ryan fan, but I'm gonna say this. What the hell was he thinking having Mark Sanchez? I know to win the game is preseason in there when you got your third and fourth string guys in there, you're going to put him in there. Man, he's lucky he didn't break his shoulder, man.
Overrated coach.
He's bad for the year. He definitely probably be fired mid-season because, wait, Not against Geno, but I just don't think Geno ready right now. He hasn't played well. And you don't have him coming and being your starter. It just it ain't success for him to win right away in New York with that offense.
Yeah.
Like you said, if that's Tony Holmes is not open one receiver either.
Our contender. We're going to jump back into the San Diego Chargers. They're number three team in the West. Chargers, when I think of the Chargers, I think window of success. And it seems that this is a team that has passed their window of success. It seems like they had about a five-year window when LaDainian was still turning. They still had Mike Turner and you know, they had, you know, they, Antonio Gates was still good. And, you know, and Rivers was, you know, being an all-pro. It, you know, it seems like for, you know, for a while, you know, they had the defense going with lights out and everybody. It seems like for a while, you know, that was their window. And they couldn't really capitalize on it. And it seems like this is a team that's pretty much in a downturn. And they're heading, looks like, I think they're heading towards a rebuilding period. Especially, you know, like I say, they're, you know, it's hard to uncertain if they're still even going to stay in San Diego because of arena and money issues. What do you think about the Chargers, Claudio?
They're interesting. I think this is a big year for Philip Rivers. I don't know. Well, I don't know. I mean, he's been given a few years. When's the last time the Chargers made the playoffs?
Mm.
Does anybody know?
It's been.
I'd say it's probably been about a couple of years.
Is it about been 3 years?
Yeah.
I think
so. It's been about that.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if Philip Rivers is given 3 years, where Josh Freeman ain't even given one, but that's another conversation in itself. I kind of feel like. Yeah, this is a big year for Phillip Rivers. I don't think they will make the playoffs. You know, they'll be like an 8-8 team, I think. You know, they have talent there. But I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, and I think after this year they're going to start rebuilding in terms of the quarterback.
Yeah.
They're going to, you know, they're going to try to get a quarterback out there, you know.
It's very possible. What do you think, Tex?
Now the Chargers are contenders, but I do like the front seven. I'm not so high on the back end. The O line is a disaster. You have a top 5 to 7 talented running back in Ryan Matthews if he stays healthy. As far as Phillip Rivers is concerned, it's just some things that he needs to. He has to clean up some things. He has to get back to the basics. You know, he had 26 touchdowns, 15 INTs last year. I mean, you know, he threw less INTs than Breeze or Tony Romo. He might be on his way out, but I think Phillip Rivers is – I think he's an okay quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback. Remember a couple of seasons ago with Street Free Agents, I mean, he had one of the better seasons I've seen a quarterback have. It's just his special teams let him down. You know, they went 8-8 and they finished number one in total offense and number one in total defense. And I mean,
yeah,
here they are.
I think that was 2010.
Yeah.
Because of special teams. I mean, Rivers was just, I mean, they had lost everybody on offense. I mean, he had guys, I mean, just Patrick Creighton and Street guys coming in, and he throws 35 touchdowns. So, I mean, Rivers is a gamer. He's a bit of a gamer. Now, he might be on the wrong end. I think we'll find out a lot about him this upcoming year. He has Mike McCoy. He's working with Mike McCoy now and Ken Whisenhunt. So we'll see how that turns out. But, and again, front seven, I like the front seven, especially the D-line with Legit and Reyes and Cam Thomas, the middle linebacker, Donald Butler, Freeney on the outside. I mean, they have some people. It's unfortunate that Melvin Ingram tore his ACL again. They have Eric Weddle, you know, probably best safety in the NFL. They're, like Claudio said, there is talent, but, you know, they're a pretender. The O-line is just a mess. It's just an absolute mess. And you got to be protecting statues. Like Phillip Rivers. So,
Mike, what do you think? Can the Chargers, are they still superchargers or what?
Like you said, Mike, they had a run for the 5 years where every year well, good while they were talking about San Diego, this one team that's going to be in the Super Bowl, this and that, but I just think the team they had, the guys they had, those parts was gone. And it's funny that Carzell kind of mentioned about what I was about to say. Could this be, you know, his last year? Could he be a guy, you know, since San Diego was still going through the team where they might be that team that moved to L.A. or something like that, could he be a guy where he could be a big-time trade partner where somebody would trade for him? Because, you know, I mean, he's still a first-round talent quarterback for a team that, you know, hey, San Diego's willing to, you know, trade him for get draft picks and, like, to start over and rebuild. Because I don't see San Diego. I think they had the opportunity. We all know in football, once you had that opportunity that time, you know, that's when it's time to start over. And I think that's what San Diego is kind of leaning to. And since mentioning him, I was just thinking about Antonio Gates. What about him? You know, he still has some trade value. Because you see how when Tony Gonzalez left Kansas City to go to Atlanta and they traded him, I think those two guys were two bargaining chips for teams out there who may be looking at, maybe never know. I mean, let's say San Diego, since they do have new coach, you know, North Turner's not there. North Turner, the Phillip Rivers coach, majority of his career in San Diego, you know, so, hey. And then the GM was out, so, you know, obviously a new personnel guy and new head coach and offensive coordinator. So, you know, let's just say they do real bad, really bad. You never know. Phillip Rivers and Gates, and let's say a team that might be looking at something or a team that's kind of middle, like Kansas City. You never know. Let's say they might make a push for Phillip Rivers.
Before we move on to the Broncos, we got a call I want to bring in from the A50. A50, you're on with the CMT Firestorm.
James.
Yo, what's good, man?
Hey, what's going on, James?
What's going on, James?
Hey, yeah, man, I got a quick question before I go into the Chargers, man. Hey, the Carcel team's ringtone to Yay Alabama yet?
No Bama fans yet.
Not yet. I was really gonna do it if Johnny Manziel was gonna be gone half the season. That's what I thought they said on the radio, but it was only half a game. I was like, what?
Yeah, man, half a game.
What kind of mess is that, man? But
that tells you how inconsistent the NCAA is. I told y'all about that, but yeah, in reference to the Chargers, man, as far as like, you know, contender, pretender, and I don't know. I got him at pretender. And, you know, being in the AFC West, I mean, yeah, they could, you know, beat the Raiders. I'm unsure about the Kansas City Chiefs this year with their addition of Andy Reid and, you know, Alex Smith. But you got your boy Phillip Rivers there in San Diego. I think it's going to be a, you know, put up or shut up season for him because he's pretty much, you know, at that crossroads where he's going to have to, you know, show and prove that he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league and take him deep in the playoffs this year.
Okay. One other thing I want to add about the Chargers, this goes out to the guys who play fantasy football, too, Malcolm Floyd. He's always been a little, gives me a little pick-me-up when I get him. Dude is 6'5". Yeah, kind of filled in for Vincent Jackson for a vertical threat. He's from out here in Sacramento, actually. Fast, big. He's kind of getting older now, but like I said, he's usually good for, you know, around 800 yards, about five, six or so touchdowns. Looks like, you know, like I said, I don't think Robert Mitchell is going to work out, but looks like Floyd might. He might get injured or something like that, but he might be putting out his warm receiver this year.
I was going to say, Mike, Meacham was out for the year. I think he tore his ACL.
Nah, he needs to, like I said, that dude was overrated, man. He never really lived up to the potential that he had coming out of
Alexander.
Hey,
Mike, Robert Meacham's not out for the year. That's Denario Alexander. And Floyd is out for a little while, but. That's Alexander.
Okay, yeah, I thought I heard Floyd was.
I thought he said Meacham too, though, Tex. I know Alexander, but I thought he was out.
Right, good. It's not. It's Denario Alexander. That's who's out for the year.
Okay.
Well, then, I agree with Mike. I mean, he's not that, like I said, in New Orleans, he really wasn't that number one receiver either. And like you said, really, the last pretty much nail in the coffin is when San Diego pretty much lost Vincent Jackson and really didn't get nothing in return from him. So, I mean, a draft, but still. a guy like that, it just, that was it. You know, that was pretty much the curtain call on that when they lost Vincent Jackson.
Okay, well, let's move on to the top seat in the AFC West, led by the invulnerable Peyton Manning, the Denver Broncos. Broncos, like I said, the Broncos, they're coming to play. They got Manning. He's coming off an excellent season. Could have easily been the MVP of last year. And even though he is getting older, I don't know, dude's about almost, he's getting up there. He's getting up there. But like I said, they have a very strong team. They're going to be without the services of Pride of DeSoto, Texas, besides Jamal, of course, Von Miller. He's suspended. What is that, Tech? 6 games?
What's up?
Von Miller, he's out 6 games?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he's going to be out, you know, a good part of the season. Like I said, I don't know, it's going to be hard missing a guy like that. And they're also going to be missing the services of Elvis Dumervil, who they let go this past season. That could be a lot of sacks they're going to be missing this season. I'm going to think about it. Wow, I didn't think about it like that.
Because the agent messed up. That's why he ain't there.
Yeah. But what do you guys think about the Broncos taking into consideration? You know, that Von Miller isn't going to be playing this for the first 3 games. Are they pretenders or contenders? Jamal?
I'm going to still call them contenders. They have the offense. I think the defense, they'll find a way defensively. They're having a few injury concerns at cornerback. They have linebackers. They get Derek Wolfe back. They still have the linebackers. But most of all, they still have the offense. They have the quarterback. They have the receivers. They have the O-line. You worry about them a little at running back because they got a Big Ten running back. And they have Ronnie Hillman, who can't seem to hold on to the ball this preseason. Monty Ball, he's done fine running. But, he's getting Peyton Manning killed in blitz protection. And these young backs, if you can't protect your quarterback, you don't get on the field. And that goes for anybody nowadays. You might be looking at No'Shawn Marino take the reins over. He's their most technically sound running back. He can do everything. He can pass protect, although he is a Jag. Jag is just a guy. But I got him as contenders as long as the quarterback is healthy and they have those wide receivers. I can't see him as anything less than a contender.
What do you see Wes Welker doing for Brett Favre? What kind of season do you think he's gonna have this year?
You mean just numbers wise or just?
Yeah, is this gonna be a big? Is he going to have a typical Wes Welker, 100 yards, 100 receptions, 1,400 yards? Do you think he's going to fit in the way that he fit in at in Boston?
No, I don't think he has a season like that. It's just the way this offense works with Manning is you have your two outside guys never leaving the field, hardly ever switching sides. So Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker, they're going to always be on the field. Welker will get snaps. I mean, he'll, if you remember last time the Colts were running 3 wide receivers, Manning had 49 touchdowns. You have Brandon Stokely in the slot, getting 1,000 yards and 10. I think all 3 of the wide receivers at worst hit 1,010 touchdowns.
Yeah, I think they all made the Pro Bowl, didn't they?
I don't know if Stokely made it. I know Harrison and I know Wayne made it. But the thing is, I think he'll still produce. I don't think as much as he did when he was the when he was part of the focal point in New England, but I do think he produces for the Broncos, just not as well as he did with New England. And there are enough balls to go around in an offense like this. There always is. You look at Green Bay some years. You look at New Orleans some years. You look at Atlanta now. There are balls to go around. So the guy will be productive. But he won't, you know, it's not going to be a 120 reception, 1,500-yard season.
Okay. Mike, what do you think about the Broncos?
Of course, baby, that's my team to go to the Super Bowl. But we all know, especially in football, it's always adversity. And, yeah, Von Miller being suspended for the 6 games, that definitely is a blow. But like you said, like Jamal said, when you have a quarterback, it's a quarterback-driven league, and they got Peyton Manning, who's one of the best, or some argue, or most probably say, still be the best quarterback in the NFL, they're going to score a lot of points. But the question is, until Von Miller gets back, and then, you know, how the defense going to respond, how they going to act with his, you know, him not being there, you know, against their schedule. I don't know. I know they got the Ravens first game. I don't know. The other 5 games, how they schedule look when Von Miller is out. But, you know, you have to score a lot of points, but, too, you have a defensive stop team, you know, hold teams down to where, you know, you have the final four where you're winning. So that's the only thing on that. But everything is looking pretty good. He made some points about their running back situation. Yeah, they don't have Willis McGahee no more. You know, I mean, Deshaun Marino is not durable. He hasn't been durable since he's been in the NFL. So that kind of is questionable right there. I mean, like you said, they'll figure something out. But to me, in their division, too, which is good, the AFC West is kind of somewhat of a weak division right now. The only team, like I said, they could challenge Denver. You know, youth and young is the Kansas City Chiefs. But still, like I said, you know, they're a team where they could be a pretender or a team that could be a playoff team. I wouldn't say the Chiefs as a contender, but a team that could be a pretender or a team that could be a playoff team. They right around the middle.
Quazell, what are your views on the Broncos?
AFC Championship game against the Patriots.
What do you
think?
I thought it was going to be last year.
Yep, but, yeah, I got. It's going to happen this year. AFC Championship game against the Patriots.
What do you think will come out of that on top?
I don't know yet. I got to see. I kind of don't know. Right now, I'm going to go with Denver. Super Bowl. I'm in the Super Bowl.
I don't even know who Denver's going to play in the AFC Championship. I still don't know. I got a team in mind, but I still don't know. Still don't know.
Mike, is a secret? I mean, what's going on, bro? What you need to do? Who's going to be in a?
It's a team that we all thought last year, or the media and all this, we all thought they would have made their stride, and they didn't get it. You kind of got the team when I was talking about you all?
No.
I'll say it now. The Houston Texans. That's
Kansas
the other
team
I could.
That's like Kansas City winning the division, bro.
Like I said, I mean, every year, you know, everybody keeps saying about San Diego, well, when Houston's going to, you know, fine, Houston will probably take that step the past, you know, few years, you know, Peyton Manning not dealing with him in that division. And finally last year, you know, they finally got it, but then they didn't get it together.
I think it's more of a question of when Matt Schaub is ready to take that step, and I don't think he can.
Do you still think they need, I mean, you got Andre Johnson, you got Owen Daniels. Do you think they still need, like, another receiver to complement Andre Johnson?
No, I don't think Schaub is the guy to take him there.
Well, he's the only thing they got right now. So
yeah, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not big on him. Never really was. But, you know, like I said, I think he's average at best, you know, but, I mean, like I said, they. I don't know, man. I just don't see them doing. I don't see them doing that way in there. We're gonna do our AFC South preview next week and wrap up these preseason previews anyway. But like I said, for Matt Schaub, I don't think he's a guy. James, what do you think about the Broncos? Hello, James.
Hey, Jay, you still there? I guess not there.
Okay, no, we lost James.
Tex, what do you think about Matt Schaub? Since you know your input, you always talk about the quarterback.
We'll discuss it next week.
Yeah, I want to.
Since he's in the South,
I want to go back to Peyton Manning. You're alluding to, is he the best quarterback in the game still? And how much longer do you guys think he can go at this pace?
Two more years.
He's been getting his timing down with his receivers. He didn't have that timing last year, but he's had a full year to get that back down. It looks like from the preseason game, it looks like it's coming back. His arm looks stronger. I'd say he got about three more years. If he doesn't get hit, I mean, who knows? I mean, 3-4 years. I mean,
when you say 3 years, are you talking about 3 years at the top of his game or just 3 years completely?
Well, I can't see a physical deterioration that will force him to retire after 3 years. I mean, he's a quarterback. He's not a running back. So,
exactly.
As far as being the best quarterback in the game, I think that's Aaron Rodgers. I think if you ask most people, they're going to say Rodgers. They're going to say Brady. They're going to say Manning. Breeze is right there. You're going to have some people saying Breeze is the best quarterback. But mostly you probably have people saying Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. But, I mean, those are the top four, but – you can make an argument Manning is the best quarterback in the NFL, like you can with Breeze, Rodgers, and Brady. But me personally, I think Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL right now.
Statistically, this was Peyton Manning's best season ever this year.
Yeah.
Besides his 49 touchdown season. And,
that's what people don't
remember.
Yeah.
I didn't realize until I was looking at it just now. I was like, wow, dude was balling.
Yeah, they were talking about that, like, right when he was in the playoffs, like, yeah, statistically his first year there, like, man, he's putting up the best. I think he can play 4 or 5 years. But we all know at a certain age, you know, in football, like you said, if his line can protect him, he don't take no big hit, you know, and get, you know, or have a serious injury. That's the only thing. But if he's able to stay on track and not get hit too much, I think he'll play 4 to 5 years. He got one of the best left tackles in the game in Ryan Clady.
Yeah.
So he should be fine on the blind side.
They got a pretty solid offensive line, so yeah. And two, being out
for 1 year, that helped. He had on an extra year because he was out of football for 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Is Manning, is he the best quarterback of our generation?
Tom Brady.
Brady?
Yeah.
What do you think, Mike?
Look how many championships he's won. Because of the championship.
If you gotta say the guy who won Super Bowls, Joe Montana, if you gotta say a guy who's just a regular, you know what I mean, a guy who just statistically wise,
when I say our generation, I mean from when we were 18 to like 1999, 2000 on.
I'd say
Peyton Manning.
I've always been on the side of Peyton Manning.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I like Brady. But Manning, I mean, I'd have to go with Manning too, just because what he's doing. Like I say, what he's doing now,
it's really impressed me. I mean, that, like I say, it was really impressive last year. You know, Tom Brady is a good story. He's an excellent quarterback, one of the all-time greats. And he has a supermodel for a wife. You know, Peyton Manning, I mean, when you think of quarterback, I think Peyton Manning jumps into your mind. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, like I say, when you think of quarterback, you know, you see guy, you see Joe Montana, and you see Peyton Manning. And, you know, he's you know, like I say, it's going to be, you know, if he can keep going at this pace for another 3 years, my goodness, that's gonna be something to see. It's just, glad we were able to watch his whole career like that. Anyway, that kind of wraps up our contender for today. You guys have anything else you want to talk about? We got a couple of minutes left. We can get our minute and a half apiece. Paul, you want to go ahead?
Well, I think now that we're talking about greatest quarterbacks of the generation, I think RG3 will eventually be the best quarterback in the game.
You want to put the if behind that?
That's a big if, man.
If he stays healthy, I think in the next 3 years, people will be saying he's the best quarterback in the game based on look at his touchdown, interception, and his completion percentage ratio as a rookie. He hasn't really figured it out yet, and he's like he had those type of numbers as a rookie. And then, you know, he has a threat of running. I think eventually he's going to be the best quarterback in the game. And that obviously means that, you know, Peyton's going to be leaving and Brady's going to be leaving. I think he will be a little bit better than Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback.
Wow. Yeah. I wouldn't even say it's putting over Cam Newton. I wouldn't even put him over Cam Newton.
Well, I'll say this. I think in terms of winning and bringing up pretty good numbers, I think RG3 will be better than Cam Newton.
I say you think he'll be better than Luck too?
Yeah, I think RG3 will be better than Luck. I think he already is better than Luck.
That's pretty bold statement. Luck threw for over 1,000 more yards than RG3 did last year.
Yeah, but if you look at the touchdown to interception ratio and the completion percentage, RG3 is better.
And Claude,
yeah, but I also look at the fact that the Colts are horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it ain't like the Redskins are winning, until RG3
brought
them back.
That's true. You're on that.
So,
well, you know, the Colts kind of hand Luck the ball and say, here, rookie. Go here with a bunch of other rookies, throw the ball 40 times a game and win.
With Donald Brown as your running back.
The Redskins, the Redskins. Oh, and Luck got popped upside the head. Didn't have an O-line at all. But you look at the Redskins, okay, we'll run the ball. We'll protect our quarterback by having this kind of running game. We won't ask him to win the game for us. You know, it's kind of like how Carolina called upon Cam Newton his rookie year. He's a rookie. He'll throw 35, 40 times a game.
And they did. And they
41 times last year too.
And they did say Luck the one when training can't stop, man. Even the time, and he was off. You know, with the NCAA because you know. Graduate, you know, he had to get that course, so he missed a lot of, you know, mini camp, and then he was behind in training camp, and they said once he came in, man, he was picking things up left to right like that. He was just picking it up. Like, they was throwing him everything. He was just picking it up like that. He wasn't regressing on none of the stuff. So, I mean, I think you got to look at the whole complete thing. I mean, maybe athlete-wise, maybe RG3 might be a better athlete than him, but if you got to look at overall quarterback, right now, I would say Andrew Luck is better than RG3.
It's funny because, like I said, that's going to be a debate that people are going to be, you know, if RG3 can stay healthy, that's going to be a debate that people are going to be having for, you know, next 10 or 15 years. Tex, you have anything you want to throw in about that?
No, I don't have anything to add.
I was going to say, Mike, unless somebody else comes in, Mike, that kind of shines over them too if they don't talk about
that
debate.
Like Greg Smith said, watch Russell Wilson, man. He's gonna have the media on his side. He's got that, you know, He's got that well-spoken pretty boy. He's got the right, you know, got the right girlfriend, you know, the right for what they want, you know. So, I mean, you know, keep an eye on him, you know, and he's talented. I can't take away nothing from his talented. You know, he's talented. He has a much better team than those guys. So, you know, and he put up better numbers than they did too. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what he does.
I was going to say about Wilson, I thought Wilson should have got that award for the SB instead of Kaepernick, talking about, you know, best newcomer athlete. I mean, Kaepernick did what he did, but, man, Wilson did that for a whole year, man.
Yeah.
A whole season. In the playoffs.
Though, but anyway, thanks, everybody, for coming out to CMT Firestorm. We're going to wrap things up for tonight. Next week will be our last preseason show before the first game on Thursday, so we're going to wrap up our league predictions, going to talk some more NCAA, and we look forward to a good show. I'd like to thank Greg Smith from Black Sports Online for coming out, and I thank everybody listening and all the callers. All right, you guys, have a good one. Deuces.
Bye, y'all. Bye-bye, everybody.